Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
Now, first question is this. My daughter is 8 years of age and is being accused of being a bully at school. I've watched her with her cousins and brother over the break and she seemed fine with them. I've been told she's using bad language and pushing and kicking out. How should I approach this with her before she goes back to school, especially as I don't see this behaviour myself?
Such an interesting one. I think it's actually very difficult to be the parent of the child who is said to be the bully.
Yeah.
Because it's something that, you know, on the flip side, if she was at the receiving end, you would feel so strongly and you would want the other parents to do something. And now you are that parent. Mm. So I think I feel, you know, quite a lot of empathy for this parent here. But a couple of things are jumping out to me here. Who is accusing her? Like, by whom is she being accused? Did this come from the school or from another parent? Because I think that's your starting point, whatever the answer is. I think you have to meet the school and say, okay, I'm aware of this. Can we work collaboratively around how do we support her? Because one of the things I did over the break is observe her at play with other children and I did not see this. So now I need to know what variables are going on in here and how might that inform what we do? Because I think we've got to be really aware of, you know, what bullying is very serious and should always be responded to very quickly, promptly and directly. But I think we also have to break down what's bullying, what's mean and what's rude. And what is actually going on for this little girl? I think I would need to know more about what the story of the bullying, using bad language towards one person, towards many people. If she's simply using bad language and shouting out in general, that would say more about her own level of distress than, you know, a direct attack on someone else. But there obviously is more because there's pushing and kicking out. So when you observed her over the break and she was fine with her brother and her cousins, I suppose that again brings up a question for me. That's quite small group play versus large group play in school. And is this to do with her not managing the bigger group dynamic? Mm. I guess there's so many more questions I have.
Yeah, it's a completely different context as well.
It just really is.
She's not, if you have been bullying, I assume it doesn't mean you're going to bully every single child you come into contact
with. Absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not. And I think, you know, on her own territory, she has much more control than in school. So there's tons of more investigative questions that have to be done there. But I think how you do that is by staying curious and responding seriously. I think you do tell her when you're saying, how do I approach it with her? Make sure she knows that you know, or that this has been brought to your attention and you're very worried about it and you take it very seriously. And you're wondering what her story is around this, that you've heard story, but you want to hear her story as well and truly listen to her. Don't just say, I hear what you're saying now, but actually so-and-so told me something different.
Yeah.
Do hear her out from her perspective. That doesn't mean you accept and agree with everything she says, but hear her out for what it is. You could use therapeutic, like, story stem dolls, get little dolls and play out the scenario. Say this is happening in a lunch break in the yard. Play out a scene in the yard. You start the story, then pause and say to her, now you pick up the little dolls and you finish out the story, what happens next, so that you can deepen your understanding and awareness of what the dynamic is from her perspective. But I think you have to go into the school and explore it with them and approach it that way. Find out more. I don't have enough here to say what exactly is causing it. Is it one child? If not, either way, I think you have to take it seriously.
Yeah,
on absolutely. Both sides, both for your daughter and for the other child or children.
I think that my husband is too harsh when it comes to disciplining the kids. Our sons are 5 and 8 and they can be loud and boisterous at times, but no more than any other kids. At times it's warranted that they are dealt with a bit more firmly, but he rarely has a calm word to say to them. The minute they start getting too loud for him or they fight, he jumps down their throat and won't let them learn to resolve the situation themselves. I can't remember the last evening where there wasn't a raised voice. I've tried to talk to him about it, but he just tells me that I'm too soft and that he knows how boys think. Anything I can say or do to change this?
Oh my goodness, like, this is just, oh, there's so much going on in this, isn't there? I think one of the things we always look at is that poor stress management is a foundational cause of anger problems in people, be they children or adults.
Yeah,
poor stress management is one of the foundational causes of anger. We also look at how frustration, impatience, irritability, anxiety can trigger those angry outbursts because of how dysregulating they are in our own systems. But we also know that the children of angry parents tend to be more aggressive and non-compliant in their own behaviour. Mm. So what I'm basically saying is there are strong links between parental anger and kids acting out. And basically this tension is just going to feed itself like a hot potato. The kids are going to act up in response to the dad's anger. Dad is going to get angry in response to them acting up, and they're just going to toss this back and forth. So there can be no winners here. I think, you know, for me, it would be really curious when you say he rarely has a calm word and you can't remember an evening that this tension wasn't active and alive. That would make me go, what other stresses are going on here? Because the children can't be that bad. They can't be the sole cause.
Yeah,
what other life or personal or professional stresses are going on for dad or for parents? And really, I think you've got a three-strand approach that you need to look at. I think dad has to deal with his stress and anger, whatever the cause are. He's responsible for his own counter responses to the children. Mm. So he has to deal with that. I think as parents, in order to get onto, at least most of the time, the same page and approach this as a united front and support each other in parenting, I would certainly suggest looking into therapeutic parenting courses that will help you to really explore and understand what is getting activated in you as parents when the boys act out or when the boys are boisterous and busy. I mean, at 5 and 8, the fact that they're loud and boisterous, it wouldn't be exceptional or concerning behaviour. If I could just emphasise that, it's utterly normal. And at different times of the day, particularly evenings, you know, things tend to reach a heightened level in most homes. Mm. So that's quite normal. But what is getting activated in you as parents when they do this? Because it's your activation that's prompting your response, not what the kids are doing.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, I think you have to get playing. I think you have to get out of this tension and get doing. If it's getting loud and boisterous, get physical. Do some physical active play, meet them at the level they're at, and then gradually wind down the energy of your play to bring them down with you. It's called co-regulation, where you set the temperature of the energy in the room, not them. Mm. So you're like, whoa, it's hot and loud in here. Okay, let's go there and bring it down through play, doing rather than saying. Because what that's going to do is empower dad and both of you actually to replace the shouting with doing.
Mm. That I also, as I just from my point of view, because I've seen this in people, the more he gives out to them, that the day is not, because they're 5 and 8. If he's given out to them every day, the day will come when he give out to them and they'll laugh in his face because they've heard it every day.
Because it becomes normalised.
And it's normal. And then it has no effect whatsoever. And so his effectiveness as a parent, you know,
well, that may already be the case, because if he's communicating to them, my expectation is that you be difficult kids. Guess what? They're not going to let you down. They will be difficult kids with bells on.
Yeah.
And at 5 and 8, it's loud and boisterous. But at 15 and 17 or 18, it's something else entirely. So I think it's about investing in the relationship so that nobody, no parent enjoys shouting and giving out and always being in punitive stance. Like, I mean, if that was giving you pleasure, it's a whole other kind of conversation we'd be having. But the level of frustration and irritability must be just so exhausting for everybody, and that there's just such tension in the home. And children are like sponges for that. They'll just soak that up and act out of it. So I really do think one tension is feeding the other.
Yeah. Someone's texting to say, my husband is the same. He's at high dough all the time. He flips the lid so easily. I also say to him in front of the kids to calm down, which I know he doesn't like, but it's the only way to make him stop.
But you know what's interesting about that is the concept of flipping your lid, because when you do flip your lid, the part of your brain that is, you know, for rational, logical thinking to calm you down isn't actually accessible.
Yes.
It's offline. Your neocortex is offline. So actually you've very quickly descended into that amygdala feeling part of your brain, which is simply firing signs, fight, flight, freeze. You are right to feel the way you do. So actually using words, even with adults, once we flip our lids,
telling somebody to calm down is the worst thing you can do.
In the history of all things tension. But actually, this is where I don't advocate, as you know, timeouts for children, but I do for parents. And I think in that kind of a situation, that's when somebody needs to walk away and take 10 minutes for themselves before they come in and deal with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm currently having an ongoing issue with my 13-year-old. He's a fantastic young boy, sensitive, empathetic and generally happy. In September, he started secondary school and he settled in well. However, he's been having bowel issues and it cannot get sorted. It started with what I believed with a couple of diarrhea episodes, leakage, but after the third bout I took him to the doctor. They ran blood tests and discussed any anxiety issues. He would have a tendency to stress the small stuff in unfamiliar situations. The bloods all came back clear, as did the stool tests. He was treated for impacted bowel and put on medicine for the last 3 weeks. when he was off school. First day back, he has issues again. I've spoken to the school and they've reassured him. When he was off school at Christmas and away for the midterm break, he did appear to have issues. He has come home on various days from school with his bowels gurgling and the fear he will have an accident. He says other people can hear it too. He also has said he would have an issue having a bowel movement in school as the noise would be embarrassing. I'm going to put him on a probiotic and have consulted a herbalist, his aunt. I'm organising a scan just to rule that out as he has an appendectomy early 2019. I'm going to ask about a referral for food intolerance. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. I really do not know what to do next.
Oh my God, my heart just breaks for this kid. That's just so difficult. And to be the parent, you know, you've really, everything you're doing and have done is exactly appropriate and right. You know, ruling out the food stuff, getting a scan, going to the GP, all of that is completely right. And I always like to rule out those organic physical things before we assume something is emotional. So you're really at that point now where these last few bits, I think, are sensible. And yes, do those. I think as well, though, you now have to consider referring to an adolescent psychotherapist or somebody who could provide him with some space to explore what might these stresses be, because he might be saying to you, there's nothing, everything's fine. But really what he means is there's no one tangible big thing that I can describe to you. This happened and I feel this way in response to it. It may be something that's more kind of bubbling beneath the surface, a rolling tension that he's somatizing so that he's not maybe consciously aware I'm struggling with this or this, but his body's holding that tension for him and it's holding the symptom. I think I really at this stage would be looking, once you've done, look at if you're doing your scan and your food testing and all of that, get that out of the way. You don't want to flood him with too many appointments in a week. I think that can be overwhelming for kids and young people. So I think I'd look at that. The other thing I wasn't picking up in this letter and I'd be curious about is, does he have extracurricular activities? What are his interests outside of school? Something that may be a release from tension and bring pleasure. So I'm thinking something physical and ideally something a little more creative. I'll be as vague as that because what that means to different people, it doesn't have to be, you know, art or painting or music. It could be, or drama. It could be one of those, a mixture. It could be something else entirely. But something that is about doing rather than thinking, just to get him out of his head and to begin to use his body in a different way, because then the stress may begin to process and work itself out. So I'd be really interested in that and if not encouraging him to get involved. And really, you know, not to assume school is fine. Get curious about that and look at what bits of school does he think work really well and he's really comfortable with. And as just now, not don't ask directly, but be curious. You know, is there any bit of school that you think that's the bit that I really don't like? And it could be something that he's like, that's grand, but if I could change it, it would be this. I think you have to get a little bit more insight into how he experiences the school environment, the other kids in his group. I'm not, you know, insinuating that this is anything other than his own tension. But you do need to get a little bit more understanding. How is he handling? At 13, I'm guessing he might be in first year. And that's a huge change, like a huge change. They, you know, he has to do lots of mini transitions during the day, manage a bigger workload, you know, lots of coordination with having the right equipment at the right time, be in the right location. There's a lot of demands on them at that age. And he may just be struggling in the management of all of those.
Yeah, because she says, yes, she says in September he did start secondary school and he settled in well, though she doesn't say when the bowel issue started or was it around the same time.
So yeah, and I think overtly he might look, it might look like, you know, he's academically coping and he's in there, but at what cost? Maybe the effort to do well is what you're seeing the symptom with.
Yeah, indeed. Right. OK, we do have to take a commercial break after that. Now, this is a question about a 24-year-old, which obviously is a bit older than we'd normally deal with. But this is a 24-year-old with Asperger's who's having difficulty making friends.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. Joanna is still with us just on that bowel issue, the last question that Joanna was dealing with there. A few texts on that. Helen says, my daughter had a similar problem. It took forever to find out that girls in her class had heard and smelled her going to the toilet in the communal toilets. Maybe there is a private toilet he can use in the school. Says Helen. Another texter says, a lot of kids will not use the toilets in school. They find them smelly and dirty. That's you know, completely fair enough. And someone else says, please advise the mum to look at The Poo in You on YouTube. It sounds like overflow diarrhea. I have no idea what The Poo in You is, or indeed what overflow diarrhea is. It all sounds a bit
but
harsh.
He is attending a GP, so yeah. You know, that kind of, hopefully yeah. That would be, and with food intolerance, that would all be looked at. Yeah
maybe just stay away from, you know, the internet isn't the place to get a diagnosis. On the dad who's a bit too harsh with the kids, someone texts in to say, I used to be like that, always on edge and shouting at my two daughters. One day I went a bit further than I ever went before and it frightened me. It was a light bulb moment, and from that time on I copped on and calmed down. Now years later I have a wonderful relationship with my girls. They're now 17 and 24, so things can improve if that father makes a conscious decision to change his life. I still live with the regret and shame of my behaviour, but I'm delighted with my relationship with them. My relationship with my wife improved dramatically and life is good. Hope that father makes the right choice to seek change. It'll be worth so much.
Oh, that's really good.
That's really good. Yeah. Though, you see, I think the
difference is it's not the dad writing in here. It's
no, wife. Yeah. And obviously this chap, you know, had a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
This other dad doesn't seem to have had a light bulb moment.
Not
he's saying
yet.
You don't understand boys.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's hope it doesn't get, like, something awful doesn't happen before he reaches that point. Anyway, next question is this. My son is 24 years old. He's on the autism spectrum with Asperger's. He has never had a real friend, which didn't seem to bother him until his late teens. But in the last few years, he has become desperate to make a friend, male or female. We've tried different groups, but because he is mild stroke moderate, he has an issue when he sees people that have special needs, as he doesn't want to be recognised as such. He's a genuinely a lovely, gentle young man who would be a good friend, but doesn't know how to make the connections. He's now on medication for depression because of his situation. He works 3 days a week, drives his own car, and has achieved so much considering his original diagnosis, but he's very sad and lonely. Can anyone recommend someone who could help him with social skills and social anxiety?
Gosh, it's so difficult. Aww. Yeah, really difficult. And I think what this letter paints so clearly is what we know, but maybe doesn't get said enough, that each person with ASD who on the autism spectrum is absolutely unique, and there's no one size solution to fit all.
Yeah,
you can't simply
yeah.
say, oh, you should do this, because you say you've gone to lots of groups. And the difficulties with social communication and interaction are a part and parcel of the diagnosis, but also will look and sound differently in everyone who carries that diagnosis. But if his difficulties are in beginning or carrying on a conversation, and even in understanding kind of the social rules of serve and return, over and back, over, and reading your responses so that I can interpret how are you experiencing me and what I'm saying, and then I have a choice to change how or what I'm saying to elicit a different response. I mean, that comes so naturally to so many, we forget how actually very complex
yeah.
that is as a social structure. So I think that, you know, I really do feel a lot of empathy here, because as well, you know, it would be easy for me to say, oh, you know, what about interests? Because, of course, that's the best way to make friends, is to find someone who has a common interest with you. So what about a hobby or an activity? But you might be listening to this, the parent who's written that in, and going, well, you know, also a frequent symptom with ASD is a restricted or repetitive patterns of behaviour around activities
yeah.
that maybe, you know, can develop an overwhelming interest in something or someone. So you have to tread carefully around that too. So I think I'm being vague and specific for that reason, that you're going to know, well, that doesn't make sense for him, but it might for somebody else. I think it is worth, though, all of that said, depending on where you are in the country, reaching out to an organisation. And if they don't already, because a lot of organisations do run social groups, I'd be aware asiam.ie certainly have social groups. Now, many of them that are listed are for younger children or young adults, but at the same time there are also adult support groups listed around the country on one of the tabs on that website. And, you know, in Dunleary Ratdown area there's PRISM. I just have an awareness of that group as well, and they're very active in terms of social groups for people who are living with ASD, and even the parents of people and the parents of adults with ASD. So that would be worth, in your locality, whatever the equivalent is, or looking at one of those national websites to point you in that direction. And I also think if you get onto one of those organisations and they don't have something that meets your needs, how about asking if they would put out a request on your behalf? Because there's absolutely no way you're the only parent of an adult
yeah.
who's in this situation. And maybe you could proactively say, hi, we are looking to make contact with other young adults who are in the mild to moderate diagnosis and are struggling in this way, please reach out and contact us. So if there isn't a, you know, a situation or group that could meet your needs right now, maybe you could initiate even a small one. And get something started.
I mean, maybe though, as you say, it can be very specific for each person, but I'm surprised there isn't kind of a person who coaches people with ASD to help them specifically in this regard, given that so many of them, because we've had questions in like this before, they struggle in the friend making.
Of course, and that doesn't just go away because you're 18 now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, this isn't exclusive in childhood. And certainly my own knowledge of groups would be much more for younger age kids. But there, I would, if anyone is listening and knows of a group, I think it would be great. And if not, there really should be.
Yeah. If anyone listening knows of anyone,
and it doesn't have to be a big group, you know, maybe this is about small social interactions. That's what I'm thinking as well. Yeah.
My son is in junior infants, and another kid in class has invited all the children in the class to his birthday party, including my son's cousin, who's in the class, all except for my son. He hasn't picked up on this yet, but I'm trying to be prepared on this one. How do we deal with the fallout of being left out of the celebration? Oh, my God.
Now, look, I mean, this really kind of blows my mind. So generally, I would advise against rescuing kids from their disappointment as parents. I think we're much better to skill them to work through disappointment and to be there with them as they, I'm so sad about this and let's work through it. However, the human part of me is erring on the side of surely no parent would consciously ask every child in a class
except one.
So I'm going to go down on the side of this has to be an oversight.
It has to be.
Like, please let this be an oversight.
Yeah.
And in that case, reach out to the other parent and wonder, is this an oversight? He's the only child who didn't get an invitation, because it may be, oh, hang on, 32 invitations went in. This shouldn't have happened. Mm. And it can be very easily fixed. If, however, when you wonder with the parent, and I really do want you to do that, their response is, no, my son feels very strongly that he doesn't want your son there. Wonder about what that's about. And it's not that you impose yourself and say, well, you must ask my son. Mm-hmm. But let's be curious about what might be going on. I really assume this is an oversight.
Yeah, they're five. I mean, you know.
And it's often the problem when, you know, birthday parties come up. You either have a policy of inviting everyone in the class or a small group.
Yes.
And then
there
isn't just one, two or three kids left out. There's either half the class or two thirds of the class left out for a smaller group, or you do invite everyone. I really assume this is. If this is not an oversight and you don't get anywhere by talking to the other parent, even parking the kind of stuff that would bring up for you, you could just, you know, stay with his feelings of disappointment. Everyone's going, that must be really hard for you. And maybe you and I could do something nice. What would you like to do on Saturday afternoon or whatever it is? And it's not that you say, don't worry about it, or you make up a story, but you accept he's disappointed. You stay with him in that feeling and help him know that these feeling states are transient and he can work his way out of it. And I think you do that by doing with a five-year-old. You don't sit him down to lecture him on disappointment.
No. Somebody says go to the class teacher, because I'd wonder how the invites were disseminated.
I mean, to my knowledge with schools, most schools really don't want parents doing this in school time or on school property because of the difficulties it brings up with this, some kids getting invites and some not. So I don't know how it was done. Look, each school is different, but the schools I would know would not want, they'd be like, sorry, no, go to the parent.
Yeah, because the teachers,
it's nothing
to
do with the school.
I'm not here handing out invites. So yeah, you'd wonder about that. Crikey. Though, my daughter, as you know, is in creche. She's a birthday coming up this week. So, and we invited the children that she hangs out with, the relatively small group. And so I left them in to the creche teacher and said, just, you know, give this to the parents of these particular kids. So when I went to pick up Cora, Cora goes, had noticed that other kids, because they're the kids she plays with, were getting red envelopes. So I was, where's my red envelope? Because, well, it's for your party. I want a red envelope.
It's not about the party. It's about the envelope.
Yeah, it's amazingly difficult to explain that to a child that they don't get an invite to their own party.
Yeah. But it, you know, it is also fine. I don't think you have to invite everybody.
I think parents need
to know that.
Yeah, it's
that
nuts.
In reality, there's a small window when you'll be able to sustain that. The sheer cost of doing that. And I think most parents in school don't want their child to be invited to 32 parties a year or whatever it might be.
No.
You know, so it is okay. But if... This is just if you were inviting everyone bar one.
Oh, that's nuts.
There is a serious
that would be
cause for
really
pause
nuts.
There.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, why do Mexicans drink more Coca-Cola than anyone else?